everybody. Welcome back to another edition of Lead Singer Syndrome, my podcast. I'm Shane Told, and every week we do this. I talk to another lead singer about his or her journey through music. Being a lead singer, crazy, crazy life, right? Especially when you've been doing it for over 20 years and you're almost 50 years old. No, not me. I'm talking about my guest, Sam Roberts, an absolute Canadian icon. His work as both Sam Roberts and as the Sam Roberts Band has been incredible for over 20 years now. He's been plugging away with double platinum albums and platinum albums and a slew of Juno nominations and Juno awards and Much Music Video awards and CASBY awards and tons of stuff. This guy has had a hell of a career and just quality music and songs. Just an amazing songwriter. Kind of a, in some ways, and I didn't ask him about this, but in some ways, not like a super putting myself out there kind of artist, you know, humble and kind. And that's two of the traits I love about Sam, but you're going to hear such a great conversation between the two of us. And I want to thank Sam so much for taking the time. We're going to get into that in just a minute. But before we do, a couple things I want to remind you of. It's called the All Access Club. And that is how I keep this show coming at you week after week for free. You can join for as little as $6 a month. That gets you in, that gets you, you know, bonus content and some merchandise and access to a great community of other fans of the show. Great people. Love you all my sinners. And of course, like I said, it does help me out as well. And without my sinners worldwide, I couldn't do this, keep this free content coming at you week after week. And if you want to just hit me up, you want to email me, feel free to. I read all my emails. I try to respond to people as much as I can. I do get a lot of email, but I like it. So hit me up, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. That's about it. The Sam Roberts Band is going on tour. Get tickets if you're in Canada or a couple of US dates as well. And my band, Silverstein, we're also going on tour. We're performing our sixth album, This Is How the Wind Shifts, kind of a fan favorite album. We're playing that in its entirety and some greatest hits all across the US with a couple Canadian dates peppered in for good measure. So head over to silversteinmusic.com and get tickets for my tour as well. Just a little bit of self-promotion there. Anyway, let's get into it. My talk with the man, Mr. Sam Roberts. Hello, can you hear me now?
Hey, yeah, I can.
We got it. I'm so sorry, man. I just got a new fucking iPhone, like an iPhone 15 or whatever. It like just came out.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know if you're an iPhone guy or not, but they have a new, they got rid of the like Apple Lightning plug.
Oh, of course.
And now it's like a USB-C, right?
So just as you're getting used to the last one, it's going to change.
I know,
and
right?
Then it throws your whole world upside down, you know?
Yeah, dude, it's like, it's fine. I mean, it's just a simple plug, right? So I'm like, okay. So I had one, but it wasn't like the new, it wasn't like an Apple one. It was just a...
like a generic...
like a generic one. But it, apparently it didn't work. So then I had bought one, but I didn't remember where I put it. So I was just had to find it. It's always something, man. But I appreciate you being here with me. Sam Roberts of the Sam Roberts Band. New music coming, 20 years of your double platinum album, We Were Born in a Flame. It's just so good to talk to you right now, man. Thanks for doing this.
Well, thank you. And I'm glad to be here as moral support as you work your way through this technological trauma.
I'm fine. I just ran up my stairs like so freaking fast trying to find this dumb plug. But no, man, we're doing it. It's good. It's a beautiful morning. And I'm excited to talk to you, man. Like, what's going on? Where are you calling me from right now?
I'm in my basement at home after a weekend. This last weekend was sort of the unofficial, or I guess official, end of the summer.
Right.
Touring season. So we played our last festival. So I think it technically was actually fall, which doesn't happen all that often in Canada. So I was, you know, just a big shout out to the festival in Galt, Ontario for daring to cross the line and actually put on an outdoor show after September 21st. So it was cool to play one last gig, and now we got to switch hats and get ready to go and put a new record out and go on our first proper tour in
a minute
in five years, which is scary to say. But
yeah, it's crazy. So are you, where do you live these days?
I live in Montreal. I've lived here my whole life.
Yep.
Born and raised, and you know, I'm now at this point, I'm starting to wonder, will I ever live anywhere else, even for a minute? So if I'm going to do that, if I'm going to take the plunge and move to some other location, I think I probably have to do it really soon. Otherwise, I'm going to stay here forever.
Right. Well, you know, Montreal is one of the most unique cities in the entire world, mm-hmm. and I've seen a lot of them. And it really is a special place and a different place and relatively inexpensive if you compare it to other, you know, world-class cities too. So I feel like it would be hard to find the same vibe really anywhere else if you're used to it. Mm-hmm. You know, not to mention like if you're happy there, you know, why would you ever leave?
Yeah, just, you know, I guess it's more just out of curiosity to see what else is out there. But I think you know, one of the things about Montreal and I guess any city is that it sort of changes as you move into different chapters in your life. The city that you've known sort of reveals another side to itself. So whether you're, you know, growing up as a kid ripping around on a BMX to being a teenager and then, you know, playing in a rock and roll band, like you said, it was a very affordable place. And I think it's why it's become a sort of a mecca for musicians to come here, is because it's a place where you can not just afford an apartment, but also maybe a rehearsal space and find some studio time. And music is a respected sort of pursuit here in Montreal as well, which I think from a sort of morale standpoint, helps you to keep going. And now it's, you know, it's a great place to raise your kids too. So I guess I'm not going anywhere. I guess I'm staying here. That's the, you know,
there you go. Well, I see that your birthday is coming up. I guess like when your birthday comes up, you know, Canadian festival season is over, right? You get to maybe have like a little bit of celebration.
I know it's the unofficial end to the, my birthday is the unofficial end.
And it's going to be the last year of your 40s. You're going to be 50 next year.
Yeah.
I know you also share a birthday with your brother, which is kind of interesting as well. Mm-hmm. But so just talk to me about like what it feels like, you know, turning 49, being where you are in your life, you know, you have three kids. You've had so much success and you've got, you know, more to come. You know, the last record was still nominated for Juno, you know, Rock Album of the Year. Just talk to me about kind of where you're at right now. I mean, obviously it's been a pretty wild ride.
Yeah. I mean, it's wild in the sense that when you look back, you're like, oh my God, look at all this stuff that's happened. And, you know, your everyday experience doesn't feel like that necessarily. You know, maybe in 2002, 2003, when things were really on the sort of the upswing, and I could say that my life changed more or less overnight from one way of living and thinking about life and music to something else. But since then, you know, you get so wrapped up in the work of it.
Yeah.
That you, and by that I mean being on tour and trying to put on good shows every day, or trying to write music from the right place, given all the things that go on in the rest of your life, and putting out records and raising a family, that, you know, the sort of wildness, even though I can pick out all these moments, it doesn't, you know, it just sort of, this is life, you know? So if I'm taking stock as somebody who is, you know, I don't know what it's like to be 49 yet, cause that's still a few days away. So I can't speak from experience.
Yes.
But as a guy in his very late 40, 8. I don't really take stock that much, you know, and I don't say that because I don't appreciate the past that I've, you know, that I've lived, or, but I just find it's not a helpful way to make music or to live your life in general at this point, to sort of dwell over much on your history. And I think that part of why we're still playing music and still able to sort of survive as a band is because we've always kept our gaze ahead on what the next thing that we want to do is, on what the next record we want to make will sound like, and what our next tour is going to feel like. And that's just sort of, I'm sure one day I'm going to sit back and do it like a big retrospective, you know, personally speaking, maybe, you know, sitting on a hillside somewhere and really like delve deep into everything that we've lived through. But I just don't feel like it's that time yet. You know?
No. Well, you know, you started your career also relatively late in your life. You know, I mean, you were, your debut, you know, solo album was what? 2002, 2003, mm-hmm. 20 years ago. So you were already in your late 20s. It wasn't one of those situations where a lot of artists, they're like kind of in their early 20s when they get started with that. Mm-hmm. You had a little bit, maybe more maturity, right out of the gate. And that's kind of an interesting thing too. But also you were coming up at a time really when music had really started to change for the first time in a long time, where people were, you know, downloading music, people were putting music on iPods, you know, and then a few years later it was buying music on iTunes and then streaming, you know, and all this stuff. Like, so much has changed, and it really has affected, I believe, how you guys promote your band. Mm-hmm. Because it was like Canada and the alternative scene that was championed by Much Music and, you know, 102.1 The Edge, like playing you so much, and the Casbys and the Edge Fest, mm-hmm. you know, so much of that has fallen by the wayside now for a number of reasons. But I feel like you guys have kind of maintained, obviously, quality in your music, but I imagine it must be difficult just to roll with the punches and be like, oh, well, there's no Casbys anymore, so that's another thing we can't promote. You know, there's no, I don't know if there's Edge Fest anymore. It's not the same as it was. You know, there's no videos on Much Music. You know, all that stuff is just, that's got to have been, I used the word wild ride earlier, but just so difficult to kind of roll with all that.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's been a chaotic time. And you know, going back to those early days, excuse me, you're right. I was 26 years old when I signed a record deal, you know?
Yeah.
And again, when you say signed a record deal, it doesn't mean you're sort of launched into the stratosphere. It just means now you have a few tools at your disposal to sort of try to carve a path for yourself. And, but I'd been in a band, like just most of the band members here, we'd been in a band for 10 years prior to that, you know, on a few sort of really small little indie labels where it was just sort of like, you know, they'd help you print 7 inches or, you know, either, you know, releasing EPs by, you know, recording the music and then burning them onto CD. It wasn't, can you even call that a release? I don't even know. I'm photocopying the artwork.
We all know? Did it, you know,
we all did it, you know, but, so we'd done that for a good 10 years during, I guess, what was the last part of that old world order.
Yeah.
You know, where the Much Musics and the radio and sort of still, if you were in there in any way, shape, or form, it meant that you had a real sort of foothold in the world of music. And in this day and age, that those footholds don't exist the same way they did then. And if they do come around, they're not around for very long because it shifts almost daily or sometimes multiple times per day. It is how it is kind of how it feels, you know.
So totally.
As a band, you've kind of hit the nail on the head in terms of like almost to try to paint a picture for people who may not have been around when when you were putting out records in, say, the early 2000s, where there was this sort of dependability to the process. And you knew that if you ticked all these boxes, that your record was actually, you know, sort of out there in a meaningful way, and that enough ears were going to be listening to it that you could then go and take the next step, which was to get in a van and plan a tour, hopefully, you know, across the country. But yeah, getting a video in heavy rotation on Much Music, getting your record played on CFNY, The Edge.
Yeah.
It that still means a lot to us, but you know, in those days it was sort of the combination of all these different things, like being written up in Now magazine or
for sure,
you know,
yeah,
the Mirror, The Hour here in Montreal, you know, Georgia Strait out in BC. It was sort of like, if you ticked all those boxes, then you knew that you were off on the right footing, and it kind of gave you a feeling of, I don't want to say security, because I don't think security, as you know, security and being in a band don't exactly go hand in hand, and it's not something you sort of rely on, but there was this, at least this feeling that there was enough happening that was solid that you could then go and say, okay, now it's time to sort of take the next step. Let's invest in the tour. Let's go out there and hit the road and try to sort of galvanize all these things and make something of it. Whereas today, it's really hard to know where you stand at any given time. Do you look at how many social media followers you have? Is that really an indication of, like, can we now go and roll the dice and go and try to book a national tour? In our experience, it's not the case, you know? So
for sure.
Where do you stand?
Like, yeah. What
boxes kind of ground are you standing on?
What boxes, you know, are there to check now? Right.
You know, it's hard to know. And it changes. The boxes today, are they're not the boxes tomorrow.
Yeah.
And our entire sort of the professional, because there were those 10 years where before it was the DIY portion of our career, then there's the, you know,
yeah,
post 2002, which is like the sort of quote unquote professional part of our career. We just happen to have picked the time in music history that is the most tumultuous.
Yeah.
Where you can depend the least on anything, basically. And yeah, we always joked, we were like, if our first record had sold the number of records that it, you know, would have sold pre Napster at the time, we always joked, it's not true, but we could have bought an island, you know. It would have been a very small island, and probably not, you know, maybe like an island in, I'm not sure where, maybe one of the Great Lakes, not like in the Caribbean or anything. But, you know, that was always our joke. It's like, man, if we just put this out a year before. But then again, that way of thinking is so flawed, because a year before might not have been our window. Maybe our song wouldn't have resonated the way that it did in 2002. So you kind of have to just sort of take that window of opportunity in whatever conditions that happens to arise, and then go with it. And yeah, ours is just to have been witness to 20 years where the music industry is essentially, you know, completely upside down all the time.
Yeah.
It's have to sort of, it's adapt insane. To that it's as insane. A way of life.
No, you know? I know. And I don't know. Like, when a young artist asks me what to do, mm-hmm. I'm like, I have no fucking idea, man. Like, I don't get a TikTok, I guess. I don't fucking know. Like, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even imagine starting.
We gotta find something, Shane. We can't just leave it at that.
I don't know. Write good songs? Like, you know, work on, like,
yeah, I mean, that's okay, about it. At least that's constructive. You're right. Like, at least we can give
your
them
instrument.
That.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah, practice. We'll start. We're going to leave it at that. Okay.
You
know, for that part of the thing,
we'll say
practice, and then, you know, good things will happen.
There you go. But, you know, you guys do have multiple, you know, double platinum albums and platinum albums and all these awards and everything, which a younger artist, I mean, it's just not going to happen. You know,
they don't exist anymore.
They don't exist.
It's not even something to chase.
No. Exactly. You know, so at least you can, that's cool. I mean, that's something cool to tell your grandkids, you know. Hey, you know,
except that they look at the plaques and they mean absolutely nothing to them.
I guess, right?
I'm like, no, you don't understand. This is a big deal, okay? And they're like, yeah, whatever, Dad. So
that's very funny. Your kids are, you must have teenagers now, right?
I do.
Yeah. Cool.
Three of them.
Are they playing music?
No, they're retired. they're in a sabbatical right now.
I love that.
One of those things. They all grew up playing violin and piano, and high school has sort of dampened that a little bit. But I'm hoping that it's in them enough that they come back to it. So that's a message from my children.
Okay,
when they listen to this,
there we go. Well, you know, speaking of new music, you have a new album coming out just about a month away, The Adventures of Ben Blank. This seems kind of like a concept album. When I'm kind of reading, you know, the little blurb about it, it seems kind of like a little mysterious. Uh-huh. Are all these songs kind of like intertwined in a way? How did you approach this this whole record?
Yeah, they're sort of told through the lens of this character who is in the process, in the first song, you know, is in the process of sort of shedding his old skin and his old identity, and venturing out into the future, sort of untethered from his past. And I think it's just an idea that has really sort of resonated with me, especially, you know, we've been talking about the depth of a long career and not focusing too much on what's sort of come and gone, but thinking more ahead and more about the untapped potential of what your future could be. And so I wanted to sort of center that narrative around a space cowboy named Ben Blank.
Okay.
You know, a cosmic traveler on the, you know,
I love that
dusty road of, and I think obviously there's a lot of, it's always autobiographical in a lot of ways in terms of where does the emotion behind a song come from? If it's not necessarily speaking exactly to your day-to-day experience, then certainly there's no hiding the fact that the feeling in the song is coming from a deep place inside of the person writing it. And in that sense, it's almost like the character becomes a way of creating just a little bit of a buffer, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Because we all need a little bit of a buffer sometimes. So
no, I know, right? It's like you can, when you put, you know, your own spin on it, right, with a character, it just, mm-hmm. it does change the way your emotion can come out, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're not saying I, mm-hmm. you know, in the same way. Even mm-hmm. if you are, you're not. And that's a really good point, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, when you write a song in a character from a character's perspective, that is a really interesting thing about writing like that.
In a weird way, it allows you to be more honest. And because I think if you do write from the actual I, then there will always be this sort of hesitation, at least for me. I can't speak for anybody else, but at least for me. But if I'm writing through, you know, one of my favorite songwriters is Ray Davies from the Kinks, and he wrote about life, but always through these characters,
right?
You know, and I just sort of, but yet somehow I always felt like it was coming from him, from a very deep place inside of him, about how he felt about whether it was the neighborhood that he was growing up in, or what his childhood was like, or what right. love was like to him. I never got the feeling that it was actually the character speaking to me. I felt like it was Ray Davies speaking to me, but that his method of delivery was through these characters. And that allowed, in a strange way, almost to get closer to the heart of
right.
who he is. You know,
it's almost like using a metaphor and an analogy, mm-hmm. kind of like in wordplay, but you're using it through another character. Mm-hmm. It does change the way, because you're right. I mean, it is so difficult, and I can only think of a few songwriters, like lyricists, let's just say, that really do it. Like Morrissey is a guy that has just mm-hmm. absolutely yeah. fearless and can mm-hmm. say I and can say anything and do that. But not everybody can mm-hmm. can kind of do that and have it seem, I don't know, Morrissey, like it's Morrissey, it's pompous. You know what I mean? That's like part of his arrogance, right? And that doesn't work for Sam Roberts, I don't think. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not an arrogant guy. You're a, You know, you're.
Yeah, I think I would. Although of all the songwriters, he's another one who I sort of hold up. You know, I think of as being at the highest sort of standard, especially in terms of being able to convey not just emotion, but to draw a picture of life.
Yeah,
and you know, yeah, Morrissey can say things that you just know. You're like, oh, only he could say that and pull it off.
Yeah, totally.
But he also sort of spoke through characters. You know, that sort of lonely kid who wants to go out.
That's true.
But you know, I would go out tonight, but I haven't got a stitch to wear. You know, just things like that, like really sort of resonated with me, and I think resonate with a lot of people. That just that feeling of despair and, you know, wanting so much more than what you have. You know, he was the master of sort of telling that story, you know, or he is still.
Absolutely. Well, I read that you went through some writer's block. I hate to bring that up. And that's something
that's
true.
Yeah.
Man. It's something that we don't talk about on this podcast very much. I think it's something a lot of artists that have gone through don't always like to talk about. It's like, everyone's afraid, maybe I'm going to fall back into it. But you know, a writer's block can mean a lot of different things. You know, it can mean like, it can mean I was writing a bunch of stuff, but I hated everything. It meant I just like straight up could not put any words together. I couldn't write anything at all. What was it for you, and how long did it last, and how'd you get out of it?
Yeah, it's like, I guess I've thought about it enough to know pretty much what it was or what caused it, and also how I got myself out of it. And I think it is a very personal thing, in the sense that how I dealt with it is not necessarily how the next person is going to deal with it, or what caused it for me is not necessarily going to cause it for other people. But I think it, for me, like the writing of the music, I tend to write the music first. So I'll have I really enjoy that part of the process. And I think of it as sort of instrumental music while I'm writing all the different parts, and I get into the keyboards and the guitars and layering all these ideas together, and basically just kind of throwing a bunch of paint at the wall. And then it comes down to writing words. And then you've written this music that you're very attached to, and hopefully that you like or love. And then you're thinking, oh man, don't ruin this with words now that detract. Your words, the words that you add to it, have to enhance the song.
Totally.
Not take away from it. And that to me is always the crux of songwriting. And I kind of anticipate it, and I know it's coming, and I'm like, okay, you've had your fun writing the music. Now it's time to buckle down and write these words. And it's always a slower part of the process. It always takes a long time.
Absolutely.
But on our last record, I really froze. I was like, something is up here, you know, that goes deeper than just the usual hesitation. And, you know, I realized that it was a far more personal issue than just not wanting to ruin a good piece of music. And that I'd reached this point, in my life, but in my life as a songwriter, where if I wasn't willing to really say something about me, and again, whether it's through a character or whether it's like fully autobiographical, that I'm willing to expose something, that this music it was almost like it was like an organ transplant, and the music was rejecting the organ, you know?
Yeah.
And it just kept bouncing all the words off, and nothing felt authentic, and nothing felt true. And it was because I wasn't, there was no real revelation going on there. And I've just hit a point, I think, and this record, I just sort of embraced that from the beginning. And I said, here's where you're at. You're a 48-year-old guy. Write how you feel about life, about what you want life to feel like, about where you've been, about what you hope for. But on my last record, I had to get myself to that process.
Right.
And once I did, then it all just kind of came out. Then it's like the gates opened for me.
Well,
but I was almost shy. I was shy to sing those things, even just being in the room by myself, let alone sharing it with, you know, my bandmates. And it was a process. And I kind of went through that on the last record. And my bandmates were incredibly supportive. And I think they all were feeling a lot of the things that I was feeling. Because they're all the same age as me, and we've all essentially lived like mirror lives of each other. So my bandmates sort of embraced this music in a very, in a very sort of personal way. And I could, and in seeing that, I guess it gave me the confidence to know that it's okay to write from that depth of yourself. And so this record, I just kind of started off where I'd left off, and it felt right. And I didn't have writer's block. So
amazing. Well, congratulations on getting through that. And I haven't heard the entire thing. I think I've heard 4 songs, the 4 singles you've released. They're all awesome. You got a favorite on the record?
Oh, man. I mean, I think there's a song called Cascades that I think is sort of, in my mind, is sort of like the emotional epicenter of the record. Like everything points at that thing, or everything grows out of that one song. So
cool.
That's a song that I guess just have to wait a couple more weeks to hear. But I feel like that's the sort of crux of the whole album for me.
I love that. That's amazing. Well, the record, The Adventures of Ben Blank, out October 20th, everybody. Make sure you check out that shit. What else? I kind of want to ask you about a couple things, like just some of your career highlights, because there's been so many cool things. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll just throw a couple out and you can kind of throw back.
Yeah, you're going to have to remind me because I can't remember.
I mean, I'm just thinking about like this. These are just things I remember just being a Canadian and seeing you, mm-hmm. you know, on TV all the time. You know, like I remember you guys playing the Winter Classic. I remember you playing the Olympics. I remember you playing for Prince William and on Canada Day. I remember all these things. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it seems like you guys are just like all the time, you know, getting these kind of like crazy opportunities when you must have gotten the call and been like, well, yeah, we're going to do that, but this is wild, you know?
That's a really good way of describing what the process is like. You can't say no.
Exactly. And they're uncomfortable because they're uncomfortable. Of course,
they're insanely uncomfortable. Yeah. Absolutely. They're heinously uncomfortable, and you can't say no. So you say yes. There's a brief moment of excitement, I suppose.
Yeah.
In the fact that this opportunity has presented itself.
And then you're like, how the fuck are we going to do this?
Oh my God, what the hell have we gotten ourselves into? And how are we actually going to live through this experience? So, I mean, if we start with your list there, the Winter Classic, it was in Buffalo, New York. We were playing, and this was when the Winter Classic, like now there are like 7 Winter Classics a year.
Yeah, but no, they used to do the one just on New Year's Day.
Yeah. And it was like a, you know, it was a big, I'm not saying it's not a big deal anymore, but it was definitely like an oddity. Like people were like, what is this? We were playing in the football stadium in Buffalo, and it was snowing hard and pretty cold. And these, you know, getting to the gig, everybody's out tailgating.
Yeah.
And just getting absolutely rifled in the parking lot.
I've been there, dude. I grew up, you know, not too far away from Buffalo. So,
well, then, you know, and it was very different from a hockey game. Usually at a hockey game, you know, like you're doing your drinking inside. This is like, you know, the fires are blazing and, everybody's out there.
Yep.
An incredible amount of people with no shirts on in the middle of a winter snowstorm. And we knew we were in trouble. We should have known when we saw that. But just walking the length of the field, and they put the stage at the far end, the end zone in the far end. And we were in the dressing rooms. We had to walk the length of the field. And the amount of heckling that we took in that walk was enough for a lifetime. Like just everything, like about how our jeans were tight. It was like the height of tight jeans.
Oh, right. Yeah, it was.
Like tight jeans were still kind of newish, but they were like really like we took to it quite seriously, and it was like they were painted on. So we got these big, like shirtless, huge dudes, you know, with like the paint on them, like Pens, or there was the Penguins were playing. Sidney Crosby was playing that night.
Right.
Scored in a shootout, actually. But we had to walk the length of this field, and man, it's like, we got to play Freebird like 200 times.
Of course, yeah.
And yeah, it was just classic. All the classic heckles.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then you've got to play when your nerves are completely shot and rattled. And then it's on TV on top of that.
Yeah, so and it's all like probably terrible monitoring and all that tactical stuff.
It sounds nuts.
Yeah, exactly.
And people don't know the songs that we're playing. I mean, we had to always be honest about that too. You know, it's like it's we're still in that regard, like a relatively unknown quantity for a lot of people. And
of course, yeah,
you know, you're, it's not like the halftime show at the Super Bowl where it's a medley of all of, you know, Beyonce's hits.
No, for sure.
This is like a rock and roll tune that they've never heard before. And, you know, again, that's where the tailgating sometimes comes in handy because they'll get into anything at that point. But
that's true. No, I'm going to Bills games, you know, over my life living there. I've seen grown adults just act as immature as anybody ever. Like, it's like the worst people end up at Buffalo Bills games. I don't know what's going on, but
well, this is how you learn, you know, as a band. Like, this is where you develop that thick skin,
right?
That so it's kind of a twofold opportunity. Like, in talking about this, if we're going to like get into what this all means, like, so the one thing is the exposure that comes with it.
Yep.
Like the notoriety, because people remember it. Whether you play, what we've learned is that whether you knock it out of the park musically or not, people just remember that it happened. They're like, oh shit, I was there, you know, or I saw that on TV.
Yeah.
So there's that part of it.
Yeah.
And that will serve you to a certain extent as a band going forward, you know. But then there's the other part of it, which is if you can survive it and you can play through it, then that, again, that armor that you're sort of building up is what you're going to lean on day in and day out for the rest of your career, as you sort of have to, you know, navigate the tempestuous waters that are a life playing in a rock and roll band.
I know, right? Like, it's so, when you boil it down like that, it does seem just like what we do as rock musicians is all, it's just kind of ridiculous, isn't it? You know,
well, I'm, you know, it's not for the faint of heart, you know? So
right.
It's maybe that's lesson number two after practice.
Yes.
Make sure you know who you are before you get into this, you know,
like what's
your threshold for pain?
Pain and embarrassment. Yes,
exactly. Pain and humiliation.
Yeah. Cause they're both coming.
Yeah.
They're both coming. Oh, damn. Sam, this has been fun, man. I know you got to run, so I'll let you go. I do want to make sure you plug your tour. You're starting out in February across Canada, a few US dates.
That's right.
Peppered in for good measure. People can get tickets, I guess, at your website, right? SamRobertsBand.com. What else to tell the people before I let you go?
Man, you nailed it all. You hit all the talking points.
I've done like 300 of these fucking podcasts, dude.
So I mean, it shows. It shows for
thanks,
sure.
Man.
But yeah, man, thank you for the time. And
I did it.
You did it. You did it. I'm just like, I'm speechless here, you know? So, yeah, just always good to be talking about the next chapter, you know, and hoping people check out the record. And,
absolutely.
And find something that they need or love in it. So that's always the hope.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to play the people my favorite of the singles you've released so far. This is Afterlife, the Sam Roberts Band on lead singer Syndrome. Thanks, Sam.
Thank you, Shane. Good to talk to you, man. Let's do this again sometime.
Absolutely.
All right, man.
Catch me now.
talk to me about the afterlife. So there is Afterlife, The Adventures of Ben Blank, the new album from Sam Roberts Band coming out October 20th. Get your hands on it. Check it out. Stream it. Go see the band live. Whatever you got to do. And I'm aware that probably 85% of the listeners of this podcast are American. And I know that Sam Roberts is obviously huge in Canada, multi-platinum, all that stuff. But maybe you are not so familiar with his music. And let me tell you, you should be. So head over to your Spotify account or your Apple Music account or whatever you use and make sure you check out some of his classic records like We Were Born in a Flame, etc., etc. Because he is a hell of a singer-songwriter and his band is awesome as well. Thank you so much for listening to this. And I want to thank Sam so much for taking the time. And of course, his whole team, because they're the best. Love you. And I'll be back next week with another episode of the podcast. You know what? I'm going to play another one, right? Why not? Here is the Canadian classic, Don't Walk Away, Eileen, on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. See you next time. Do walk away.